We're talking about you, your rights. Up next, Judge Jim Gray continues to join us. By the way, his couple books, Why Our Drug Laws Have Failed and What We Can Do About It, War on Drugs, Wearing the Robe, his website linked up for you right at coasttocoastam.com. Judge Jim Gray with us. Jim, Edward Snowden, hero, traitor?
Yes.
to both?
Well, yes. I think that he showed us what our government has been doing, and we're shocked by it, and we're appreciative of that. However, he also left the country. I think, you know, if somebody's going to be involved in civil disobedience or doing these things, you should have the courage to stand up and say, this is what I did for that reason. I'm prepared to take the consequences.
I'll fight it right here.
He showed a lot of other stuff that really should not have been disclosed, and that was virtually treasonous.
He went too far, didn't he?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, first of all, does he have an obligation to reveal illegal acts of government?
Let me answer it this way. I believe that if Governor Gary Johnson were to be elected president, the first day after his inauguration, he would give a public discussion to people that work for the government, the federal government, and would say, look, you're going to do it right. You're going to do the right thing for the right reason. You're going to make sure you follow the law. If you see anyone that is above you that is not following the law, you call them on it, and you tell me, we're going to do this. You know, I was a federal prosecutor, as you said, and I ended up heading a unit prosecuting frauds against the government, FHA, VA, that sort of thing. Prosecuted a lot of bank vice presidents. We believe in responsibility at all levels of society, and that starts with us, and the higher ranked you are, the more accountable you should be. That's what our country needs. People will thrive on that, and as they see that we hold bank executives and other people responsible, then they'll be prepared to accept responsibility themselves. We have lost that. We must regain it.
What do you think the mood is right now, Judge, of people in general?
I think they are concerned about our country like I am. Let's talk about liberty, because that was the keynote coming in. George, you know as well as I, there are people all around the world that love America, that love Americans, that would give anything to be able to come to America, live in America. What is it that makes us special? They may not all be that enthusiastic about our government, and many times I'm not either, but they still see us as special. Why? Because of our freedoms and our liberties, and that's the soul of our country, and today our very soul is under attack by our very own government, and nobody is particularly standing up. Snowden helped, but nobody is standing up. Certainly, George W. Bush attacked our soul. Obama has embraced that and continues to do even more. Governor Gary Johnson stands up and says, no, we're not going to continue this. We're going to close Guantanamo, just like Obama said. But he's been thwarted by Congress. I'll give him that. But we need to retrace our soul and stand up, exceptional as we are, and say, you know, we're better than this. This is not what we do. Did you ever feel in your lifetime, George, or our listeners, that we would even debate whether somebody should be tortured if they're in our custody? And we're, you know, going through that debate. It's simply not who we are, and we're going to get away from it. People are fed up, rightfully so.
You mentioned the Peace Corps. I'll tell you a funny story. My late uncle, back in the mid-50s, lived in Massachusetts and, of course, presented to John Kennedy, who I believe was a congressman at the time, the blueprint for the Peace Corps.
Really?
And Kennedy eventually was one of those responsible for developing it.
Yes, I entered the Peace Corps when I graduated from college in 1966, so it was about maybe two and a half years after it began. And Kennedy was my hero at the time. Thereafter, I found out what he was doing in his private life, and he certainly is not a hero anymore. But he certainly did some good things. I was proud to be in the Peace Corps, and honestly, I feel I'm still in the Peace Corps. You know, you're kind of that bent. And we all need to make the system work. Every one of us has an obligation to make sure that within your own atmosphere, your own ability, you make the system work. And the Peace Corps volunteers do that, and so should everyone else. It's up to us.
You talked about his private life and that it bothered you. Did it, really disappoint you?
Oh, yes. Oh, indeed so. You know, the idea that Clinton was in the Oval Office doing those things with Monica Lewinsky. You know, I'm not a prude, but that's simply not something that a president should do.
No, it's not. It's not.
President Kennedy was a predator, from what I understand. You know, would find these interns. At least Monica Lewinsky thing, I think, was consensual. But with Kennedy, he would attack girls, from what I understand, and some of the now women have said so. He was in a lot of ways raised that way by his father, but no, it's reprehensible, and he is not a hero in my book anymore.
Did you ever look into, as a prosecutor, the assassination?
No, but I know my father was a federal judge. He is a hero in my life, and he was a real admirer of an attorney by the name of Joe Ball. Joe Ball was a great trial lawyer, and he was on the Warren Commission that did investigate the Kennedy assassination. And if you can convince Joe Ball that it was as we now have been led to believe, you've convinced me too. So I do not think that, from my standpoint, that there was anything that was not disclosed. I could be wrong, of course, but that's my opinion.
You know, as we look at some of the issues that are facing us in that are truly, I think, tearing the guts and the soul of this country apart, I just don't see it stopping. I mean, it just seems to be going faster and faster and faster.
Yes. Of course, technology can do that. In a lot of ways, privacy is kind of a thing of the past because, I mean, you look at Google Maps, for example, and you can see your house and you can, you know, all that sort of stuff.
Oh, everything.
Technology cannot be stopped, nor should it be, but we still need, in effect, to have a privacy amendment, in effect, in the law to allow us to have privacy, not because people cannot intrude on it electronically, but we make our conversations private, and we make our thoughts private, and we make our bedrooms private by law. And I think that that's where we should go. It can be done. That's our history. Of course, there's always been a trade-off between security and privacy, and you can go back to Jefferson or Cicero or Socrates, but we are getting so far into the security aspect, the snooping aspect, and it doesn't work, and even, you know, the torturing, et cetera. It simply doesn't work, and again, this is our soul, and we need to reclaim that soul.
Do you think terrorism is based on people who just hate us?
No.
Or it's contrived by groups or associations who truly just want to upend the apple cart?
Well, we are not attacked much. I mean, obviously 9/11, but we are fairly successful in keeping other things from occurring. We are a symbol. Osama bin Laden could care less about our freedoms. He wanted basically to make a statement against Saudi Arabia, which is where he is from. We support Saudi Arabia. We're the ones that are out there, so you get more bang for the buck by attacking America. If we weren't putting ourselves out there so much in this whole specter, we wouldn't be the victims of so much of this terrorism. On the other hand, terrorism exists. We can go back for a quick minute to the war on drugs, because if we really cared about fighting terrorism, George, we would adopt the one most effective tool against it, which is take away its money, restrict its money. Every terrorist organization around the world gets its primary source of funding from the sale of illegal drugs.
That's right.
So if we could take away that money, there are always going to be bad people around the world that want to do bad things to good people. They'll be far less effective if they don't have as much money. And I hate to say it, almost with tears in my eyes, the government of the United States of America does not care so much about fighting terrorism. They won't even talk about that one most effective solution, which would be to repeal drug prohibition and take away that money.
Judge, what do you think of that missing Malaysia Airlines plane deal? Have you thought about that one?
Well, I have. It's very peculiar. Again, I don't have any particular knowledge, but seemingly, I mean, the gears on these planes are amazing. They had to have been turned off, which they probably were, and then the plane veered around in a different direction.
Very weird.
There's something really strange about that. You know, you remember that Egyptian Airlines plane, I don't remember how long, 15 years ago, whatever.
That's when the pilot tanked it, right?
He simply flew it into the ground.
Yeah. Now, see, I don't think that would happen in this case because he wouldn't fly all over the place. He would just do it.
It was just peculiar. I'm baffled by it, but there's something, I hope we find out someday, there's something disastrously wrong with it, and it was not a mechanical failure. It had to have had someone in the crew, something doing something. Because even if they, you know, blew the plane up all of a sudden, which they probably did not do, we would have found some wreckage. This is, it's just peculiar. I don't know.
The big part of me thinks it's still on land somewhere. Jim Sanders, who wrote the investigation of the downing of TWA Flight 800, thinks it might be on land somewhere. There was a report, there's a new book out, that it was accidentally shot down by a Thai U.S. military exercise.
Wow.
And that we are so embarrassed, we don't want to say anything about it. I haven't ruled that out, but it's just the strangest case I've ever seen.
I don't know, George, but certainly something's going on that we don't know, and it could be a variety of things, I suppose, because it's so unusual.
Let's talk about people's pocketbook for a second, Jim. Not beyond the IRS, where we're headed with the economy. I mean, we came out of a rough situation in 2008. All the experts I've had on this show say we're not out of it by any means, and that the next one could be even bigger. How do you see this?
I see it exactly that way. I'm very concerned about our economy. What is the biggest security threat to the United States of America? And it is a weak economy. And as I say on the campaign trail, I know Governor Johnson says the same, that for every dollar the federal government spends today, we're borrowing 20 cents. I spoke at Cal State Fullerton University a little while. I speak to high school and college kids, look them square in the eye and say, you know, I've got some bad news for you. You're bankrupt. But when you get to be, you know, in your 40s, the Social Security will not be there for you. We are borrowing against your future. If you're not involved politically, you're going to wish that you had been, because it's your future that is at risk, and we've got to turn this thing around. And we're not doing it.
Do they listen to you? When you say bankrupt, do they listen?
They do, and they're beginning. I mean, we get more and more libertarian groups and more younger people doing this. I mean, I don't care if they're libertarian or not. I just want the right result. But we have to bring financial responsibility back to government, and we're not there at all. And again, it doesn't matter if it's George W. Bush or Barack Obama. It's beyond. Remember, Republicans used to accuse the Democrats of, oh, tax and spend Democrats. Now it's tax, borrow, and spend Republicans and Democrats. We're the only game in town. We will bring back that financial responsibility, just like, of course, Governor Johnson did when he was governor of New Mexico. But I'm deeply concerned about our economy and about our future. You can go back to ancient Rome, never conquered from without until they, in effect, overextended and become so weak that then they fell. And it's the same thing with the Ottoman Empire, basically the same thing with the Soviet Empire. George, guess where we're going right now?
We're doing the same thing.
We exactly are. It's not too late, but it's critically important that we gain, again, some financial responsibility in government, and we're not there at all.
Don't you think we would learn by looking at these past episodes?
Well, we're doing the best we can. You know, I'm talking with you. I know you're talking about it.
No, I mean government. You think government would look at what happened to Rome, what happened to the Soviet Union?
Honestly,
simply say, my gosh, this is happening here.
Honestly, no, because our system, politicians do not care about the future. They only care about the next election.
Yes, you're absolutely right.
We have people that are buying votes today. I saw 2 weeks ago, here in Orange County, where I live in California, a sign on the road, it was about 4 feet by 3 feet, four words, George, four words epitomized where our country is going today. And the four words were, claim your subsidy, Obamacare. You are entitled. I owe you. It's that sort of thing. Again, I want to make sure that people have, they're not going to starve, they're not be hungry, and that they have health care. But this is the wrong way to go. You're not entitled to these things. I don't owe you anything. It's your obligation to get out there and work, but we will help you because we want to. But again, as a libertarian, I believe, yes, we need government, but government's the last resort instead of the first resort, and that makes all the difference.
Doing away with the present tax code would be the best economic stimulus we could come up with.
It's mind-boggling. It's just mind-boggling. Making business decisions for business reasons, personal decisions for personal reasons instead of tax reasons. I just updated my will and my trust. George, I read it. I didn't even understand my own trust, but it's all because of taxes. And imagine the amount of money that we spend on keeping tax records and preparing income tax returns and the bureaucracy and the fraud and everything that goes with it. It would stimulate the economy unlike anything else that any of us could come up with. It will reclaim the prosperity that we want and bring back millions of jobs like we discussed before. That's the thing that will do it.
Well, and most of those agents for the IRS, they're not going to be out of work because they still need to collect the sales tax, right?
Well, and, you know, we're probably not going to fire people from government.
It'll be attrition.
That's right. You know, I would abolish probably the Department of Commerce. I would probably abolish the Department of Education, look into the Department of Agriculture, certainly the Bureau of Indian Affairs, that sort of thing. The Department of Agriculture, by the way, I checked this on Google recently, 105,000 people employed by the Department of Agriculture. When they went in the 30s, there was something like one regulator for every 3,500 farmers. Today it's about one in three. I mean, it's just out. I saw a cartoon recently where you had two men talking to each other. One was in tears, and they were both worked for the Department of Agriculture, and one of them said, "Well, what's the matter, Charlie?" And the guy looked over and said, "Well, my farmer died." You know, I mean, it's really that way. It's out of control. Big government, though, put them in their place, is really good at one thing, and that is increasing the size, the power, the cost of big government. And that's what's happened over the last number of decades. It must be reversed.
Did you hear that story of that beef processing farm that was selling cancerous beef and that the agriculture agent either missed it or turned his head or something? Unbelievable.
It's
cancerous beef.
I know.
Blech.
Well, I mean, you can always come up with horror stories, and that certainly is one. But we just have to reduce the intrusion, the regulations of government. Again, they're really good at maintaining the bureaucracy. I mean, that's what they're good at. You look at the educational system, and you have lots of people in the local school districts doing nothing but preparing documents and statistics to turn them to the state capitol, where they have more bureaucrats. It isn't helping get kids educated. When I was in the court system, we had huge numbers of people doing nothing but funneling information to Sacramento, and they were funneling it back saying you didn't do it right, not helping me try my cases, not helping get the cases done. It's bureaucracy for its sheer sake, and that's where we are, and we've just got to turn it around.
What would you do to get us out of this debt mess that we're in?
We've got to stop government spending. One really important way...
Stop or slow it down?
Slow it down, of course. Right. You know, go to a question of sunset provisions. Of all federal agencies, require them, I don't know, every 7 years to come to government individually and show what they've spent in the last 7 years, what they have accomplished in the last 7 years, what they're proposing for the next seven, and let us look at it. First of all, of course, it'll give the bureaus an opportunity to shine. It probably won't happen too often, but let them take their day in the sun. But we can reduce the duplication. We can reduce things where they're no longer needed and trim those things down. And if they don't get that passage of the ratification in Congress, they're out of business. And so we will trim down government that way. It's just a really important step that we must take.
When we come back in a moment, Judge, I want you to go through your five important steps of what you think we need to do to make our lives a little easier, because that's the bottom line. Our lives should be easy, and they're not. They're frustrating for so many people. Judge Jim Gray with us. His website, judgejimgray.com, linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. We'll be right back. Well, if you find yourself out there somewhere and you're not near your radio and you want to listen to the program and you just don't know what to do, grab your smartphone and listen to us live. Grab the iHeart app. That's it. Or go to iHeart.com. Simple as that as well. And you don't have to worry about a thing. Welcome back with Judge Jim Gray. Jim, back in 2012, of course, Governor Johnson pulled in a little less than 1% of the total vote. He's going to have to be very, very big in order to get elected. Why doesn't he go back as a Republican if you can't get into these debates, for example?
Well, that's going to be up to Governor Gary Johnson. He tells me that he's a libertarian and will stay a libertarian. And, you know, I believe that had the Republicans been smart in 2012 and nominated Gary Johnson, he would have beaten President Obama by 10 points. But I just don't see the Republicans being serious about what Governor Johnson and I would do. They don't want to shrink the size of government. They do want to intrude on our liberties. So I don't think Governor Johnson, as he found out, is going to have a chance of getting anywhere in the Republican Party. And, of course, as a practical matter, particularly since he left them and became a libertarian. But, you know, that's you'd have to ask him more directly, but that's my opinion.
Understand. Well, you know, when the time comes, if he declares, we'll have you help by get him on, and we'll chat with him. As Ron Paul has come on this program before, too.
Yeah, Ron's a hero in a lot of ways, and so is his son Rand. By the way, with regard to Rand Paul, it's my understanding that his Senate seat in Kentucky is up in 2016, and unlike, for example, Congressman Paul Ryan from Wisconsin, he could run for both under Wisconsin law, both vice president and Congress. You cannot do that in Kentucky, as I understand it.
Or just about any place else.
Well, he's going to have to choose to either give up his seat in Senate or stay there, and I think he'll probably choose the latter.
Yeah, you may be right about that. A couple things, and then I want to get your top five choice things that you would fix. Israel and Iran. I am absolutely baffled that that thing hasn't exploded yet. I think it should have exploded a year and a half ago. It has not. Somebody's holding back. What do you think is going to happen there?
I think that Iranian people are quite sophisticated. Our foreign policy would be, in effect, like I see John Wayne's gaze, if you don't mind. John Wayne, if you look at him in his movies, says, you know, I'm not going to start anything, but if you do, sort of thing. I think Iran knows that if they were to do anything aggressive with Israel or anyone else, Israel is our ally, as it should be, and they would regret it. The response would be overwhelming. Israel, as far as what they're going to do or not, I just don't have an opinion. I don't know enough about it. And I don't know where we are with them. But Iran, in my opinion, we should continue to negotiate with them, and we should have actual more exchanges of cultural events and education and the rest. And the more you get close to them, I think that the less radical that they will become.
Let's go through your top five. This will be a review. We've talked about many, if not all of them. What are the top five things that you would change?
You know, that's an interesting question, and good for you. I think the most important thing that we have to change is our schools. We all want to have good schools for our children, for our grandchildren. And I ask the question, who is in a better position, George, to decide where and how your children should be educated, you as the parent or the government? And everybody, of course, obviously says we the parents are. So if you give the parents the ability to say where the government money will be spent, on which school and under what circumstances, they will demand excellence, they will receive excellence. You can call it a school voucher or a coupon or a scholarship. It doesn't matter what you call it. You let the parents choose where that government money will be spent, just like in Milwaukee, where I was actually campaigning in 2012, and rather embarrassingly, I forgot where I was and was going through this, and they stopped me and said, well, you know, Judge Gray, we don't have any bad schools anymore. Parents have been able to choose where that money would be spent about 6 or 7 years ago. The bad schools are gone. And so we need to get into that at all levels of society, particularly those people that are in the lower socioeconomic areas. Lots of schools are failing their children. We get to them to choose. They will demand excellence. The bad schools will go out of business. The good teachers will thrive because they'll be paid more and have fewer restrictions. So that is one. Number two, we did talk about, I won't take too much time. Mm-hmm. You can come back to any of these you want.
Sure.
But repeal the tax code. Repeal the 16th Amendment. Go to that fair tax, that consumption tax. It will make life so much better for us. Stimulate the economy like you won't believe, and be able to make business decisions and personal decisions for personal and business reasons. Number three is, as I was writing these down when you're talking, you know, we have so many regulations. It's so difficult for a startup business, for people, for young people, for minorities, for the rest of us to begin a business because you have all of these regulations, state, local, federal. For example, here in one of our cities in Garden Grove, I understand that in order, if you at home want to put in a new water heater, You have to go to the city and pay $50 for a permit in order to do that. I mean, that's just a waste. You go to a bonded agency and buy a water heater and let them put it in. They're perfectly skilled to do it. They'll be bonded. They'll do it right. You just have all of these frustrations with all of these regulations. My wife is a physical therapist, owns her own clinic. All the regulations that we have are strangling us, and they're really good for bureaucrats. We need to repeal many of those regulations. Number four, for people, one of the easiest things to resolve, and I wrote a book called A Voter's Handbook, Effective Solutions to America's Problems, and in the introduction I say the last thing in the shortest chapter will be immigration reform. It's not that hard at all. In fact, Governor Johnson says it best, where we will issue work visas pretty liberally. Yes, have a background check for mental health and for criminal justice issues, but George, if you can show you can come into here and support yourself, you can come in. You can get an orange card, whatever you call it. You can come across the border, you know, just like you or I can. If you can support your family, you can bring them too. No welfare, you know, you're not going to be involved with that, but you'll be able then to be here legally. You'll be able to get a driver's license. You'll pay your income taxes. You'll get insurance for your car. Today we have millions of people unnecessarily and harmfully being punished because of this situation. Why don't we change it? Good question. The answer is many, many very powerful Republicans give lip service to the change. They don't want to change it because they love the cheap labor. And many very powerful Democrats give lip service to it too, but they don't want to change it because they want all these people coming into the country eventually voting for Democrats. As a result, we haven't changed it. They could have decades ago. They don't want to. We would. That is something from an equitable standpoint as well as an easy fix. That's where we should go. Last thing, you gave me five, is this whole healthcare thing, and we talked about it a little bit, but I'll just leave the issue with the question. You or I today can get quality healthcare for reasonable competitive prices in two areas. What are they? And the answer is eye LASIK surgery and cosmetic surgery. Why? Because the government and insurance companies are not involved. So you've seen these ads all the time. Come to Dr. Gray, I've done this LASIK surgery 25,000 times. Give you payment schedules, competitive prices, etc. That's where it should be with regard to all of our health care. And then, today, if you have a knee problem, George, you go to a doctor, Doc, I have a knee problem. She will say, well, you want an MRI? Well, why not? You know, I'm paying a lot of money for my insurance, so it'll cost me $30 on a copay. I'll take it. But if you're spending your own money, what are you going to ask the doctor? Well, Doc, what's it going to show me? How much is it going to cost?
Mm-hmm.
You ask that question today, the doctor will blanch. They won't even know how much it's going to cost because cost is not a factor. So costs keep going up. That's why that's why healthcare has gotten so expensive. Bring it back so you're paying your own money, and then, you know, you're augmented if you can't afford it, but it'll be so much less expensive. You'll get quality healthcare once again. I was raised in the 50s up to the middle 60s. It wasn't even a topic of conversation that you cannot find reasonable health care for reasonable prices. It just wasn't involved. But then the government starts getting involved. First, 1965 with Medicare, and they continue to get more and more involved. And guess what? The more the government gets involved, the more complicated it gets, the more expensive it gets, the more cumbersome it gets. Get the government out of it, making provisions for the poor, and we can talk about them more if you want to. But that's what's caused these problems. It's government causing these problems.
Of these five areas, which one would you tackle first?
Education.
No doubt.
Education, sir. Okay. We need to
even beyond the drugs.
Yes. Well, I mean, yes. I mean, I do lots of them. The military, I would not have go into all this adventurism. It's creating untold problems. Going into Iraq, I was campaigning at that time in 2004, and I said publicly that if we go into Iraq without the full involvement and assistance of the world community by putting our soldiers on the ground, it will be the biggest mistake of my lifetime, and I've seen nothing to change my mind since. You know, Al-Qaeda is now thriving in Iraq. They weren't there. You know, it goes on and on. So stop the military adventurism. By the way, something really important, it's a breach of contract with our vets, our veterans, where they have brain injuries or they have post-traumatic stress. We're doing wonderfully while they're still in the military, but eventually they're discharged, and the suicide rate among people that have been in the military, Vietnam and thereafter, is hideous. It's something that we must correct. So all of it, that's a cost of war also. So, I mean, there's lots of things, but you asked me, the direct answer is educational choice is the first thing to do.
We need another principal like Joe Clark.
Yes.
Into our school system. Somebody to just clean things up.
You know, the parents will do it. If you give them that choice, they will demand excellence. The good teachers will respond. Today, of course, teachers are not stupid. They realize that the money is in it in administration, so the better teachers, in effect, go out of the classroom to become administrators. In private schools, far, far fewer percentage of administrators and the good teachers are teaching. You know, it's something that's an inherent systemic problem that we will do away with when we finally allow the parents to decide where that educational money will be spent. And then a lot of them, you know, maybe your child doesn't want to become a PhD in economics, that they really like to be an aircraft mechanic. We'll have vocational schools for that person, just like they do in Germany, by the way, very successfully. Bring back that integrity, that ingenuity, that creativity that today is being lost. We're teaching for the test, you know, that No Child Left Behind is just another bureaucratic boondoggle, and so are the rest of these. Bring the control back to the school districts and the parents. You'd be amazed, beneficially, of the results.
When's the last time we had an elected presidential official implement some of these ideas, or even attempt to? Has it ever happened?
Well, George W. Bush tried to change privatized Social Security and got stepped on because people did not realize what he was trying to do. I give him credit for that. John Kennedy actually reduced taxes. Clinton reduced taxes. That's good. I think I've run out of gas. I can't think of any more off the top
of
my head.
There aren't very much. No, there aren't. But this would take some aggressive plan to sit back and say, look, we're getting rid of this. We're repealing our tax code. I can't give you the answer right now, but believe me, we're going to repeal it. We're going to do something about the prohibition of drugs, and here's why.
Yes.
And, you know, just give us a step-by-step. We can get into it later, but give us the commitment that we're going to get it done.
And that's right, and that's called leadership. I think the best way of doing it is to have a very public blue ribbon commission to look into the tax issues, for example.
And the schools.
And the schools, each one.
Each one.
And do this, drug prohibition, all the rest, health care. I don't know what the system is in Germany for healthcare. Maybe we should find out, or Japan. You know, let's learn from other systems and do this publicly and put it on C-SPAN or whatever. And so then they make recommendations, and then we end up moving forward. I'd put us on the metric system, too, by the way.
Then I'd have to learn it all over again.
You bet. My wife's parents were in Canada when they went on to the metric system, and even my wife's parents in about 2 years were just conversant with the metric system and the rest. Bob Dylan was right. You're either busy being born or busy dying. We would show the world we're still busy being born, which I think would be good for us and good for the rest of the
world. Centimeters in an inch, 2.54, I think.
Makes perfect sense to me.
Makes sense, 2.54.
What is a Hector, by the way?
You know? Yeah, that's right. Who is Hector?
That's right. So all of these things, it's exciting. You run into people. Again, I'm so sold on Governor Gary Johnson. In fact, he's a world-class athlete.
You got to be his best PR agent, for crying out
loud. You know, I just believe in him. He is a marathon runner. He has, since the election, climbed the highest peaks in six continents. That Antarctica is now on his agenda for the last one. So, and he rides in 200-mile bicycle races. But then I look at him and tell him, yeah, but I can take you in ping pong. He kind of chuckles. And I can, too, by the way.
Would you be disappointed if he didn't throw his hat in the ring?
Very. For our country, yes. I would be very disappointed.
What's he doing now?
He's climbing mountains.
That's it?
He's a skier. He had, out of college, he started his own handyman company, turned that into the largest construction company in New Mexico, had 1,000 employees, made payroll, and then eventually sold it when he became governor, and no one lost their jobs. So he made some money on that, and I think at this point, he's enjoying himself, and he's traveling around the country. I'm going with him in some places. I'll see him in Seattle. What day is today? Thursday. I'll see him in Seattle a week from tomorrow. He's devoted to this, and it takes some time.
Well, say hi to our Seattle folks. We're number one in that city, and they love us out there.
Well, it's you're pretty good time. In Los Angeles, too.
Yeah, we sure are. We've been fortunate, knock on wood. Well, you know, it's going to take Well, this is what's so funny about all this, Jim. This isn't difficult to change. It really isn't. It's just common sense.
George, I wrote my book on Voters' Handbook, Effective Solutions to America's Problems. And when I endorse it, if people ask me to, I invariably say, these problems are just not that difficult. There are solutions to these problems. It's not that hard. It just is not. I already told you who is against our change in the tax code, you know, for the various vested interests. The school unions, honestly, are against the free choice in education. Government is money. Government is money. It's a question of from whom you take the money and to whom you give it. And, of course, government keeps a lot for itself. People don't understand that, but it really is money. And my personal belief is, you know, government does not create wealth, so they're taking it from others. Individual people are much more able to decide beneficially how to spend their money than the government is. So the money will still be there, but keep it in your pocket, keep it in our listeners' pockets instead of government, and people will thrive where now they're not. But there's money involved. There's a lot of vested interest in keeping the status quo. Drug prohibition, my goodness, you know, who is winning today? You talk about any area you want, program. Some are winners, some are losers. Ask yourself, who's winning today with regard to the war on drugs? The answer is pretty straightforward. I have six groups. See if you agree with me. First is the drug lords, the guys that are making millions, tens, hundreds of millions of dollars a year tax-free, and they're laughing at us. Number two groups, people that are winning are juvenile street gangs. Most predominant source of income for all juvenile street gangs are the sale of illegal drugs. They're using it as a recruiting tool. They're winning. Third group of people are the politicians that talk tough on the war on drugs, not smart, just tough, and they get elected and reelected. A fourth group of people are those in the private sector that make money because of increased crime, who, well, the prison guards union, people that build prisons, that sort of thing. The fifth group of people are, in effect, the terrorists. We've talked about that already. So these are things that we just need to look at. It's money that's influencing these decisions. And we need people to stand up, note this, and get some leadership positions to turn this around, because it's not going to happen with the people that are in those vested interests right now. We need people like you to talk about this regularly and give people an understanding of what's really going on around them. And thanks for doing that.
Well, you know, we feel the pulse of America, Judge. And, you know, we just know that people out there are frustrated. They want to change. They want the meddling to stop and all these areas. You know, you gave me the top five. I bet if we kept going, we could write another 15 more.
We could. We could. There are things here that just need to be changed. And to quote your phrase, George Nuri, you're beyond belief.
Yeah, sometimes. So your book, Why Our Drug Laws Have Failed, where can people get that?
Oh, it's on Amazon. You can order it through any bookstores. It's on Kindle, so I'm proud of it. It's Temple University Press. It was updated just in 2012, so I'm proud of that. Another one is Wearing the Robe, where people, if they're interested in judging, it talks about what it's like to be a judge and how to become a judge and how to settle cases and that sort of thing. And then there's the Voter's Handbook. So when I stopped following professional football, actually, when the Los Angeles Rams left.
They went to St. Louis, where are you?
Well, that's right. I stopped following, so I had time to write three books.
All right, we're going to come back and take a final hour of phone calls with you next as we talk about legalization of drugs. You've heard it. We'll take your calls next.